Hey everyone, it is June, beginning of June, as a matter of fact. And if it's the beginning of June, there's only one person that could be in the Caddy's Cafe. And that is my friend and yours, the cutest keyboardist I know. He's giving me a face right now. Mr. Nicholas Rhodes.
Hello, Catherine.
How are you?
I'm okay. All considered, I'm fine. Thank you.
You look very cute today. Surprisingly so. I don't want to embarrass you or anything, but you look adorable. Welcome to the cafe. What's the weather like in London town?
That must have been because it's a cardboard cutout you're talking to.
No.
The weather is actually glorious for once here in London. It's about 80 degrees. It's bright and sunny, but pollen, you can barely breathe if you go outside, I'm afraid. It's in the air, as they say.
Yes, it's been a very terrible allergy season here, but one of my children goes to an allergist, and they said to me that by the beginning of June, it should ease up a little bit. So I'm hoping it's the same for you.
You never know.
You never know.
Even in June, I got that right.
Yeah. So we finally have something to talk about. We have lots to talk about this cafe. And let's start with the song Invisible. Tell me. I guess what I really want to know is why you chose Invisible as the first single to sort of bring Duran Duran back into the forefront after 6 years.
I don't know. It's a bit of a bizarre paradox to me, Catherine, because Invisible is obviously no longer invisible. I think it just felt like the right song to come back with. It was a lyric that Simon had written very much about a relationship where it's one-sided and somebody doesn't get heard. But it grew into something much bigger over the last 12 months, 18 months, as the world plunged into these times we've all been enduring. I think we all at times felt somewhat invisible and certainly isolated and lacking contact with friends, family, people, places, everything. And given the nature of most humans wanting to have some kind of contact, it really was, I think, one of the worst things that could have happened to all of us. And so the song took on a whole new, broader light, really. And I think that played a part in our decision too. It just felt like the right message to convey for the time. And it's got an energy to it, the song. As a piece of music, it's one of the first ones we wrote when we got back into the studio after 4 years of touring and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the early ones. It was written in London along with Graham Coxon, who was on the writing sessions with us. So that was exciting and inspiring too. Errol Alkan produced the track with us. Errol's got a lot of energy. Let's say a lot of energy. I think he stores it in vast bunkers. I'm sure he charges himself at nighttime. But it's infectious, and the energy I think really lifted a lot of the songs on the record.
So did you connect with Errol through Graham or Graham through Errol or neither?
Neither, but there is a coincidence in that I had met Graham. I'd been on a panel, a David Bowie thing with him, and I'd not met him before. We got along really well, and I'd like what Graham played on the guitar and what I'd heard. And so I said, well, why don't you come do something with us one day? And we sort of talked about it. And then I ran it by the rest of the band and they said, well, that'd be great if Graham's up for it. Yeah, everybody liked the way he played. And so you know, some 18 months later from when I'd met him, I sent him a note saying, hey, we are going in the studio. You know, would you like to join us? And he'd written back positively. And then we met Errol, a producer that was actually recommended by lovely Karen, who used to work with us at Magus. And one of the first things Errol said is, oh, I hear you've been talking to my friend Graham.
Oh, how funny.
And he said, I would love to have Graham on the guitar. He's amazing. So it all just sort of aligned. And we went to Flood Studio, Assault and Battery in London, and there it was.
Oh, how fun. I did not know this. Errol is very enthusiastic. I've been texting with him since the release, and he's certainly lots of fun. So I can imagine he brought that into the studio with him.
Yeah, high energy.
Yeah. And then you performed at the Billboard Music Awards with Graham, and you did a medley, and it was the first time you performed Invisible live for an audience. What was that like?
Well, it was for a TV audience. I would have loved it to have been for a live audience.
Right, that's true. Right, right.
But it was fun, you know. Learning a new song was something that we hadn't done for a while, so it wasn't too complicated. But it was fun to have something else in the set already. We filmed at Hammersmith Apollo, which is, as many people will know, a very significant venue here in London. Most notably to me, for where David Bowie said goodbye to his Ziggy Stardust character on stage. But for many, many other shows, most recent thing I saw there was quite a while ago, but it was Mr. Giorgio Moroder. I went with, I went with Roger, and we saw Giorgio's show there. And I saw Kate Bush there a couple of years ago, who was extraordinary. It's an amazing venue. So it was fun to actually be inside of a venue again. I think Billboard Awards, we'd never done it. So it made some sense for us.
What was it like performing with Graham? Were you so used to him?
Well, Graham's great. He fits in very easily with us. As he played guitar on that track, it seemed to make sense to do that. But of course, we'll still be working with Dom too.
Mm-hmm. Good. I know some fans were wondering that. And then the video for Invisible has Nick Rhodes written all over it. So...
Well, it's Nick Rhodes via Wendy Laister.
Right.
I love the video. It's my favorite visual thing we've done for a while. It was, without a doubt, Wendy Laister's baby. She'd introduced me to some interesting tech people who have a company called Nested Minds. Mm-hmm. And we'd be talking about lots of things we could do together, discussing NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
A controversial subject amongst many, but I think there is something really great about them and something I don't like, but that's a whole other issue. But we got to a point where Wendy had been having some discussions about their AI computer called Huxley. So I immediately fell in love once I knew it was called Huxley. Just the perfect name. It is indeed a very brave new world that it's entering. It's very young. It was only born in 2020. So it's an infant. But it's different than regular computers as an AI being, or being or not to being, is that being the question? It actually is trained in the same way, to think in the same way, I should say, as the side of the human brain that dreams and creates things. Most computers are just simply based on yes and no answers and on logic, mathematics, they're cognitive. Whereas this computer was based on the work of a neuroscientist called Carl Friston, whom all the Nested Minds team admired. And it follows the same pathways in the brain. So it comes up with very unusual things. It is literally able to make decisions that normal computers cannot.
Is Carl still alive, or he is not a person that's still alive?
I'm unsure. We should check.
That's interesting.
One of the most foremost neuroscientists, anyway. Huxley, when given an image or some information or video, processes it, and there's nothing you can really do to change what Huxley does. Huxley makes its own decisions. So, for example, when presented with a keyboard, a number of keyboards, it responded with a zebra.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. That to me is the work of genius. It's like playing surrealist games with it. And you know, a bass guitar, it came back with a fish. Huh. I imagine that because of the spelling of sea bass, maybe. But its logic is varied, and it does make these creative decisions. So I had so much fun with the Nested Minds team and Wendy on many, many late night Zoom calls, going through images and discussing where it was going, what it was doing. At one point, Huxley became completely obsessed with dogs, and all it wanted to do was make dogs, purple dogs, pink dogs, tall dogs, long, thin dogs, dogs with big noses and giant eyes. It just kept making dogs, and nobody could understand why it had decided to make dogs. So there were all kinds of wild, wonderful things. But in the end, what it produced as the first AI music video, I have to say, I think is pretty extraordinary, regardless of our part, our song, anything to do with Duran Duran. The fact that an AI creature, entity, being, it, whatever, programmed device, however you want to characterize an AI, it is an artificial intelligence that made a video for our song on its own, based upon what it was fed, obviously, but mind-boggling as to where this starts to lead to, and thrilling for us to have been able to do this first. We've always loved technology, and I think this is something very, very special. And more than all of that, I love what it did. It's the decisions that it made, the way it morphs one thing into another. And the more you watch it, you see how strange it created its own animals. It's the things with different limbs and trees. I quite like to live in Huxley's mind for a while.
Was there more than one video, or did you accept the first one?
No. It created literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of things.
Oh, so you were like the director with Huxley, the band, sort of.
Well, we didn't have a director. Huxley really did it. What we did have was obviously an editor to just piece together what Huxley had put there. Otherwise, we'd have a video that was about 12 hours long, I think.
That's so funny.
Extraordinary.
And then the visuals of the band, you guys filmed yourselves, is that correct, singing the song?
What we did, yes, we just did iPhone videos of us literally lip syncing the lyrics so that it could measure the distances of our faces and see how mouths moved. And it had hundreds of pictures of each of us, and it chose whatever it wanted. Huxley made those versions of us. And as you can see, there's something about them when they move that it just isn't human at all.
They're very creepy. I thought they were creepy in a, you know, in a good way.
I thought they were delightful, Catherine.
Of course you did, as you have a baby head behind you. So of course you did. But no, it was, I mean, at first when I saw the video and I thought, this is super creative and cool. I wonder what the fans are going to think of it. And people loved it. I was pleasantly surprised. I wondered if they thought, oh, the guys look not like how I expected them to look. And then people thought it was so cool. So there you go. All's well that ends well.
I think, one thing about our audience generally, which I don't like to generalize, but is that they expect things to be different. They expect unexpected, much like the Spanish Inquisition.
Right.
And I think the fact that they're happy to go on these journeys with us is what's made our relationship with our audience unusual.
Yeah. No, I was excited. So I know you don't like, nobody likes dropping hints on my cafes, but will there be a next single?
Yes.
When do you think it'll come out?
I haven't got the faintest idea. But there are, I don't think there'll just be one more single from this album. I think there will actually be several. We're taking a different approach than we have with the previous few albums. I think that because we worked with a bunch of different producers, with Giorgio Moroder, Errol Alkan, and also Mark Ronson, there are tracks from each of them that stand out.
Mm.
There's a track we did with Mark with Leaky Lee, which is different than the other songs on there, but I think that one has something unusual for what we do even. Then there is the two tracks with Giorgio Moroder, of course, are a couple of my personal favorites, because he's one of the main reasons I got into music was Giorgio Moroder, and I loved what he was doing with synthesizers and sequencers and his film music. So that was an absolute joy working with him. So we got a lot of stuff to choose from.
That's a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
Speaking of a lot of stuff to choose from, you've been quite, what's the word? I can't think of it right now. Not versatile, but your output during, your artistic output during.
Prolific would be the word.
Prolific, thank you. Quite prolific. And you're also working with Wendy Bevan on the Astronomia project. I don't think we've really spoken about it at length because it hadn't really come out when we did speak about it, and then we did our Oscar Cafe, so we didn't speak about it then. So how is that going? I think you're gearing up for a new release, am I right?
Yeah, you see, that's exciting to me. Always sort of releasing records once every 5 or 6 years. It takes too long. Life is too short. So
I agree.
Whilst I was waiting for Simon to finish a lyric, I made 4 albums. actually almost 5. The 4 albums coming out under the Astronomia series. The first one came out in March.
Yeah.
The second one will be out on June the 20th on the summer solstice. The third one will be out in September, and the fourth one will be out in December. Now, there's something that appeals to me about this, Catherine. I love the mathematical equation of 13 tracks on each one released every 13 weeks on the solstices and the equinoxes, and a video each week, a total of 52 in 52 weeks. It just all makes perfect sense to me. Everything is in harmony.
I know you have that mind.
I wish other things were sometimes a little more like that, but of course they're very different. It's been a pleasure, the Astronomia project. We did it remotely.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy was mostly in Los Angeles, California, and I was here in London. And so we were able to work. I used to get tracks from her that would come overnight from LA, and then I'd do something to that and send it back. Then I'd make a track and send it to her, and she'd do something and send it back. And so it was, a little like Exquisite Corpse, the surrealist game where you draw on a piece of paper and fold it over and give it to the next person. You don't really know what's going to happen. It was quite surprising and exciting.
Mm.
So they're all instrumental. It's analog synths, violins, choral voices, orchestras. I love that sort of palette to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy's very talented. It's great having someone play violin around, because we never really used solo violin much.
Mm-hmm.
I used it a little on Arcadia, but we tend to use orchestras if we're doing stuff with Duran. And so actually having the ability to make all these beautiful soundscapes was great.
Mm. And you two probably, at least right now, can't do anything live, but if you could, would you be able to? Would you be able to recreate any of Astronomia live?
It would take a lot of people to create it, because a lot of it is orchestral, and there's samples, but when you use a choir sample, the choir's maybe 40 people or 60 people.
Mm.
If you really want to create it, or of course we can play the samples. Yeah, I mean, it is doable. It wasn't specifically built, the music, to play live. It's more cinematic, but actually it'd be quite nice to perform all four pieces when they're out, which I imagine will be 2.5 to 3 hours of music. It'll be quite a body of work. We've completed the basis of all the tracks so far. The second album is obviously finished. So we're working on the third album now, just tweaking things and adding things, changing things. Because doing it was one thing, writing the pieces of music and playing on them. Mm-hmm. But then once you have to release them, of course, you get to this realization that, but I could actually make that a little better if I did this.
Mm.
So it's,
that's
it's an
you.
It's an awful lot of work. Well, I don't like letting go of anything unless I really believe that it is as perfect as I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I accept that, of course, there are flaws in things, that anything that you put out, it's never perfection, but you've got to get as close to it as you can.
Speaking of perfection, Duran Duran are going to play two, maybe two live dates in September.
I hope so. I really hope so. We all do. We're at the mercy of the governments, the growth, or the slow decline, we hope, of the virus. It depends what happens. Here, everything is supposed to open up in the UK on June the 20th, I believe, 21st. And everybody's now starting to feel that date is going to get pushed back probably a month or so.
Oh, my. Did you get your second vaccine? I know you got one.
No, I am due to have it any time now, I think, maybe next week or the week after.
Nicholas. What do you think about touring? What do you think it'll be like next time you guys go out on the road? You did predict 2022 2 years ago, and I said, no, it can't be that long.
2022-2023, I believe, was my prediction. Yeah, and I still stand with it, because the problem is, even if countries like the US and the UK and some other European countries are obviously now getting a lot better with vaccination, the rest of the world is a long way behind.
Mm.
And particularly some of the poorer nations. And so I very much agree with the premise for all the wealthier nations to help the poorer nations as much as possible with vaccination, because until that's all done and everybody is safe, the virus will continue to travel. It's mm-hmm. common sense. We've all seen it. So I'm not sure that things will really be perfect anywhere in the world until the middle of next year into the following year. Undoubtedly, things are a lot better. Things are opening up here in London. I know they are in America too. But although we're all dying to get moving, I think we've also got to act with caution, because we don't want to go 2 steps forward and 5 steps backwards.
Right, right, right. But do you think touring will be different in general, like no meet and greets and no... It'd be hard for you guys to do that stuff and feel safe, I would think.
I think that everything will be different in the world about everything.
Right.
Everything about everything. That wasn't a very good sentence, was it? Yes, things will have changed. People will have a different view. A lot of things in people's personal lives too. Most of the people I know are assessing what they really do want from life now, mm-hmm. meaning they've all been working from home and a lot of them have enjoyed that.
Right, right.
Other ones it's been a complete nightmare for, and they can't wait to just get back and be around people and be in offices or mm-hmm. other places where they're not stuck at home. So I think there'll be a rebalancing of a lot of things. And regarding touring, we won't really know and how possible it is and how many places you've got to go, and insurance is a big issue.
Right.
An issue here, very sadly, for festivals, which I think was a horrible decision on behalf of our government, because a lot of the governments across Europe are covering insurance for music festivals.
Right.
And our government has made a decision not to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think our industry has already taken so much of a battering, and people want to see live music. I want to see live music. I want to see theatre. I want to go to art galleries. And the more support that those sectors have, having had very little so far, mm-hmm. the better. So I think it's a disappointing decision. I do hope the festival that we are the festival that we're headlining, the Isle of Wight, I hope it goes ahead.
I am hoping that you have a fabulous birthday. What are you going to do on your birthday?
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't got any particularly special plans.
Will you go out?
Oh, probably, you know, get my private rocket and get a mask for the evening or something.
Come visit.
I don't know that I won't be going that far, Catherine.
Did you get your birthday present from Tanner?
I did not yet.
No. Okay.
But there's plenty of
just
days.
Just wondering. Okay.
I don't know. I don't really have plans. I'll probably work.
Mm. That sounds like a good birthday for you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty typical. Maybe you'll go out for dinner and you'll bring your own silverware and like a little helmet with a raisable, like a astronaut helmet. You could raise it up while you eat.
You never know.
Nicholas, it is always so much fun having you in the cafe. I could speak to you all day long, but I know you have to do press and stuff for your album and stuff like that, so I can't keep you. But I want to wish you, on behalf of the whole fan community, a most delightful birthday. It's going to be a good one. I feel it. I think it's going to be a sunshiny day full of strawberries and cats.
Oh, that sounds right to me. I like both, Catherine.
I know. I ate strawberries yesterday and thought of you, actually. I did. I thought, oh, Nicola, because I didn't used to like strawberries. No, I liked them as I got older. That happens. Anyway, happy, happy birthday. I'm sure I'll be speaking to you on your birthday. But on behalf of the whole fan community, I hope you have a delightful day, my darling.
Thank you very much, Catherine, and to everybody else, in advance of your messages that I do often receive, they're all greatly appreciated. Thank you.